And it was a human guttural reaction from a Black parent surrounded by non-Black families. The things we have to think about, that being one of maybe like five brown families in a school of probably 800 families. And it got to the point, I'm a yeller. Ugh, I'm a yeller. I said it and I'll own it and I'm working on it. Because if you push too hard, it's very different than your friend pushing too hard. While I don't always see the behavior immediately, the times that I do are just really cool.
Hey there, I'm Alyssa Blass Campbell. I'm a mom with a master's degree in early childhood education and co-creator of the Collaborative Emotion Processing Method. I'm here to walk alongside you through the messy, vulnerable parts of being humans raising other humans with deep thoughts and actionable tips. Let's dive in together. Welcome to our new limited series, Respectful Parenting in Real Life. I get to hang out with some folks and dive into what this work looks like outside of scrolling through Instagram or that picture-perfect snapshot of respectful parenting. What does it look like when you drop the ball, when it's messy, when we're imperfect humans, or when our kids don't respond perfectly as we planned? Buckle up for some real stories from real humans, and I hope that you get to see glimpses of yourself or your kids in these stories to know that you definitely are not alone in this journey, and there's a village of folks walking right alongside you. All right. Let's dive in. Just a little disclaimer before we dive into this episode that the audio was a little choppy for the first 3 minutes. It clears up after that. Thank you for bearing with us for the first 3 minutes. Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of our Respectful Parenting in Real Life series. Today I get to hang out with Jamie Jones. Jamie is a mom to two kiddos who are 5 and 7, and we're going to take a look inside what respectful parenting looks like in her family unit, in her household. Jamie, thanks for joining me today.
Of course. I'm so happy to be here.
Can you share with folks just like a snapshot, give us a scenario of a real life scenario of what this looks like in your household that we can kind of dive into.
Yeah, I have two boys and they're wonderful, but they have two very different techniques for regulation. They have very different sensory input needs. I'm typically working and cramming my day until I pick them up from school. So I'm just like, go, 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 go until it's 3 o'clock. And then I have to shift modes very quickly into mom mode. And so right now we're really navigating kind of who needs what when we all need something that's very different.
And as soon as I bring this home, I'm trying to navigate who needs what, myself included, because I haven't really had a minute. And it's been work mode in the morning, where I'm typically showing up for others during the workday. And I get about 10 minutes in the car by myself before I'm rushing to two different school pickups and then bringing them home because the weather is cold and not everybody wants to be outside. So right now, us getting home has been the trickiest part. Usually it's a snack immediately. I have to bring a snack in the car so I don't have hangry kiddos when we get in the house. And then one wants some like wind down, shut down, I'm overstimulated time by himself. And the other one needs to move his body. And they both want me to be doing two different things at one time. Mm-hmm. So right now we're trying to navigate it where the little one gets a few minutes of like mom snuggles while the big one gets his snack and kind of figures out what active game we're going to do. And so I'll sit with Griffin and we have a little bit of cuddle time if he's willing to have some cuddles. Otherwise, he'll just kind of sit and he'll listen to some songs and sit on the couch. while Malcolm eats a snack, and then I'll go do some active games with Malcolm. But in all of this, I'm realizing that I still haven't had like a moment to regroup. So we're good for about the first hour and a half when we just kind of get into this go, 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 mom's on full activity mode. And then all of a sudden mom realizes, like, wait a second, I never had my time to sit and unplug. So we're trying to create more communication around mom needing more time before I blow a gasket and am no longer the respectful parent. And it happens every day around the 4:30 hour. And this past week, for example, Griffin was very dysregulated. He didn't get enough time. He was very triggered by everything Malcolm was doing. Malcolm needs loud movement in your face, and Griffin needs quiet alone time, and he wants me to do it. And it got to the point, I'm a yeller. Ugh, I'm a yeller. I said it, and I'll own it, and I'm working on it. But I lost it. I mean, I lost it. I was not regulated myself. I was not calm. Malcolm was triggering Griffin. Griffin was triggering Malcolm. They're yelling. I'm yelling. It was not. I mean, then they start coming with, you know, mean things because they're feeling dysregulated and angry. I'm not saying the kindest of things. And I just screamed and I told them to pause and everybody stopped. And I immediately apologized in the moment, like right then and there, and had to just pause and stop because we just get down these snowball moments where we're all rolling down this hill and no one's feeling calm or centered. And then we all blow up and we've like completely lost control of the car, right? We're just like going off the rails. And so I'm really, really, really working on, and this changes throughout phases of parenting, and I can like speak to that too. But right now, with where the boys are at, I can pause and explain to them because they understand how we've gotten to this place and try to show that I'm honoring what each of them needs. And I think that's the hardest part for me, and where I start to feel depleted as a mom is trying to hold space for everyone's different needs in the house when I have not yet had my moment.
Totally. Well, and if you're going into it, and I think so many of us do, we're going into it feeling like, even if I was regulated, I'm struggling to figure out how to meet their individual needs at the same time, you know, even from a regulated standpoint. And then when you throw in just life, and that so many of us are running from one thing to the next, that, yeah, I right now I'm working part-time. And when I have on my work days, I feel like I'm way more dysregulated because I have a child who won't take a bottle and nurses. And so much of my day is like, okay, after this meeting, I have 15 minutes. I'll go out and I need him to nurse right then. And then I'm going to go back. And so even those like little breaks that I used to have in between meetings right now are like, my body is not my own. Right. And so I just feel you. I feel like I get to like 5 o'clock and I'm like, woof. And we have hours to go. And I think that 4:30 marker, you know, we had at one point a couple of years ago, we pulled folks' seat and just asked what was the hardest like window of the day. And we gave some options, and 4 to 7 was by far the hardest, overwhelmingly. Yeah. And it makes sense, right? From a regulation or dysregulation standpoint, it makes total sense. What does it look like for you right now in this age and stage with the boys when you lose your cool and you're yelling, and then you have awareness of that, of like, oh shoot, like we've gone off the deep end, and now I'm going to try and bring the calm and enter into repair. What does that repair look like, and how do the boys respond?
The beautiful thing is they're really, they understand apologies right now. And what we're working on is not forcing apologies, showing that they're genuine, but also that it comes with a changed behavior or an effort of a changed behavior. If you've hurt someone, if you've said something that was unkind, if you've, you know, blown up and you're trying to stay calmer. So my apology always comes with, an explanation, not justifying my behavior, but explaining how I got to that place. And also with the explanation of what I'd like to do differently next time for myself, with no blame on them, with no underlying tone of there being fault for anyone else. And really owning it is kind of what I'm working on right now. And sort of what I'm trying to show is that I am not perfect. I'm going to yell when I don't like it sometimes, and I don't like it. And that I'm going to try to immediately catch myself in the moment. And the coolest thing now is I've seen Malcolm say, or acknowledge when I pull back very quickly and say, I know, Mom, I can see you're frustrated. he's catching me almost before my apology because he sees me catch myself. And I think my, in our household, for me, my biggest way to show respectful parenting to them is to just show that I'm consistently trying to work at the things that I say I would like to do differently, and that they see that effort all the time. Because I know I'm never going to do it perfectly. I might always start to raise my voice quickly and then pull it back and like show that I'm trying to bring myself to a calm space or take that deep breath and model that behavior. And I was proud of myself actually when I saw Malcolm kind of say, I know, Mom, I'm really, and then he started to apologize. And I said, no. We all can say I'm sorry to one another because we know that we don't want to speak to one another like that. And that, while none of that was perfect parenting, it was kind of a really nice moment to show sort of that my effort to keep working towards this is really all that I can do. And I want to model for my kids that I don't expect them to be perfect either. And I don't want them to apologize to please me. I don't want them to act a certain way just to please me, but really kind of operating from all of our actions coming from a place of an effort to be kind, an effort to be respectful, and an effort to own when we feel like we haven't done those things. And it's cool right now with them at these ages because they're really kind of starting to understand that. And I think in my brain, it was harder for me with toddlers to model respect parenting or what I thought respectful parenting should be, because I was having a hard time understanding if they were sort of grasping it.
Totally.
And getting like reciprocal behavior or not really being able to see a change in behavior because they're tiny and they're figuring things out. And so I think what I tell a lot of my friends who are really sort of diving into their respectful parenting journeys, whatever that looks like in their household, is to just kind of like stay the course and understand that that's going to change with every phase of parenting. And so I'm kind of loving where it's going, even though it still sort of feels like two steps forward, one step back sometimes. I know it's really never one step back, but that's what it feels like at moments.
Yeah.
Hormone Harmony is an all-in-one hormonal balancing solution for women of all ages. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormone changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Hormone Harmony is perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put your life on hold, like hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, occasional bloating and gas. Yeah, Hormone Harmony can help with all these things. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like yourself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code VILLAGE at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code VILLAGE for 15% off today.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Well, I wonder too, you know, you said, I know it wasn't perfect parenting, but I don't think there is perfect parenting. And I think part of it feeling like there's one step back is still this perfectionist mindset that so many of us have, where we're like, we're going to reach a point where nobody yells and everyone always speaks respectfully and nobody reacts. And I just don't think that that's a realistic or the goal, you know, like I think that, but when we think of it like that, that like, all right, we're moving towards this end goal where there are no big expressions and everyone's regulated in how they communicate, then it feels like we're failing constantly. And it feels like those steps back. And I hope that we can start to see this shift in the same way that I don't expect Zach, my husband, and I to always be so kind and regulated in our communication, that there are going to be times where we're tired, or just the other day had a, thank you, Sage, terrible night of sleep. And I was just noticing like all of these little things that most days they don't matter to me, but all of a sudden I was like, oh, how dare he do X, Y, and Z. And now I was like, oh, okay. I know I'm not in a place to bring up almost anything today that isn't essential because I can't do that kindly. And that's real, you know? And like, I guess we think when we are in that perfectionist mindset and we think that we're working toward this goal where there are no big emotions or dysregulation, then it feels like, oh, it's not sinking in. And yeah, I guess it's just like, that's not my goal anyway.
Yeah. I mean, no, I completely agree to the like pick and choose your, not battles, but pick and choose what gets brought up on any given day. how regulated is everyone's feeling. And I, you know, I'm trying to, and I feel like this is where I get myself confused or like wonder what's the best way, is to kind of like teach the boys to acknowledge the times on that they can be really kind and really respectful, and maybe when timing is appropriate. And I know that they're a little young for this, but you know, for example, my husband was super stressed the other day. He was having a really, really horrible day at work, and I can read the room, right? I'm an adult, and I can read the room as to maybe giving a little bit more space and not asking unnecessary questions, or if it's like offering to make a cup of coffee, just because you can see that, you know, a kind gesture might be needed. And I looked at the boys, he had left the room, and I looked at the boys and he was a little snippy, as we all get. And I looked at them and I was like, whew, daddy's having a real hard day today. And I said, what's something that we can do down here that would maybe be really nice to cheer him up, so that we can also give him a little bit of space to have a moment to reset from work. And so we went into the conversation about, you know, sometimes it's really hard when mommy's brain is thinking of dinner and packing lunch and doing the dishes and homework. And then someone comes up and asks a question, and my brain starts to feel like all the things are spinning. And I looked at Malcolm and I said, do you ever feel like that? Because I know that he does. And he said, yeah, sometimes it just feels like there's a lot of things going on in my brain. And so I'm trying to create like a sense of, relatability and understanding for 5 and a 7-year-old, which is tricky, but without making them people pleasers. I don't want them to feel like they have to act a certain way just because someone else is stressed, but maybe having a little bit of empathy when they can maybe see that someone else is feeling a little bit stressed, you know, because we're trying to do that for them. And I try to say to them, it looks like you've had like a really, really busy day at school and you're maybe feeling a little bit exhausted. So let's talk about it later. And whatever that looks like, but it's, I'm finding it more challenging and more fun at the same time to be able to have these conversations with them. Mm-hmm. And while I don't always see the behavior immediately, the times that I do are just really cool. And like, it's more of them being just like little empathetic humans. And I have one who I worry about being a people pleaser and one who really is just, he's figuring out the empathy in a way that might not always be natural for him. Mm-hmm. So it's fun. It's exhausting and it's really fun. And I'm just kind of really enjoying myself now, sort of seeing the ways that I feel like I've progressed in my language. And I kind of like seeing my husband sort of tack onto that too, in spaces that felt used to feel really unnatural to him. And now I'll kind of hear certain phrases come out of his mouth and I'm like, oh, this is good. This is good. So it's changing all the time.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Jamie, I wonder for you, raising two Black boys, what is there an additional pressure that you feel to make sure they can regulate, that they can communicate kindly, that these, in the reality of like safety for them in the world? Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. We just moved to a new suburban area, previously in Manhattan. And it's kind of wild that there's certain things I didn't have to think twice about or worry about in his city school that now I am hyper, hyper, hyper focused on. Mm-hmm. And some of it, well, no, all of it makes me really sad, if to be completely honest. Just the things we have to think about, that being one of maybe like 5 brown families in a school of probably 800 families, it's a very large elementary school. And we've already had a call from the teacher. I've already had a call from the vice principal. And we've only been there for a few months, probably 3 months.
About behavior?
Behavior. Mm-hmm. And he's really strong. He's a very strong athletic kid. He's a mover and shaker. His body has to be moving at all times. And he's with the most compassionate, empathetic soul, my child who absorbs everything, and he's very sensitive. He's never intending to hurt anyone, but they were playing push tag at recess and he pushed too hard. All the kids are pushing. I think it's a ridiculous game, but they're all
very silly game.
It's a very silly game. And I'm like, who's paying attention to this? But I hate being the one that has to say, you can't play that. Because if you push too hard, it's very different than your friend pushing too hard. And I said, does anyone else get spoken to about this? And sometimes it's yes. And 9 times out of 10, it's no. Mm-hmm. And there was an incident with language, which the wild thing to me is he's picking up a lot of things in first grade that we don't perfect or not. And I don't, this is judging no one's
problem. Totally.
My husband and I don't swear in the house. We just don't. And the kids are very aware of what those words are and that they should not say them when they hear them. And they always like make a face when they hear it, just because they don't hear it in our house all the time. We don't say that. Mm-hmm. We just don't. We do with each other. I have a trucker mouth, but I just don't in front of the kids. And so when I get the call from the vice principal, it was, you know, well, we need you to understand that there's at home language and then there's at school language. And we need to make sure that you understand what that is. And I said, well, we don't speak like that at home. And Malcolm is very, very aware that those are words that are not appropriate or kind to come out of his mouth in any environment. But thank you for clarifying that for us. And I try not to get passive aggressive because I really love to have an awesome relationship with the boys' schools at any time. I like to be that parent that comes in and reads and does all the things. And I have never been less motivated to be involved at a time where I probably need to be the most involved. I need to be present and I need to be there. And I feel like I have to destigmatize a whole bunch of things about our family as the new family in this district. And I hate that. Like, I have to show up at pickup, put together. I have to speak to the parents. And like, I feel like I have to explain how we parent. And I feel like I have to stop him if I see him getting too rough at all after school when all the kids are being rough, but Malcolm cannot be rough.
Right.
And I worry because, you know, we had an incident where someone was trying to consistently cutting in front of him at line, and he'd been coming home and telling me this. And I'd been telling him ways that he could handle it at school. And then she did it one day, and they were standing at the top of a staircase in between one class and another. And he put his shoulder out so she wouldn't cut in front of him, and she tripped over his foot. And that was the first call that I got, was that Malcolm pushed a girl and that she was going to fall down the stairs. And after talking to multiple other people, that was, you know, the very exaggerated what could happen. But now he's the rough kid. Now he's the kid who uses poor language. Now he's the one who was late like one time for school. So where the family is tardy. This is the first time, I think, oddly enough, living right in the thick of Harlem, that I've ever had to explain to him in this much detail or make him feel like he can't do things that his other friends can do.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. While you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Because
do you feel like you need to express to him that not every space is a safe space for him to express his emotions, and that sucks. Mm-hmm. It absolutely sucks. But is that something that you feel like in navigating respectful parenting at home that you need to make a delineation for him about, like, this behavior is safe at home and not outside of home?
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, I think what Russ and I will say is that's exhausting for us, sad for him and hard for him, and exhausting for us, because I will always be his landing space for emotions. And he idolizes my husband, and they're super duper close, but I'm the primary parent when it comes to the soft space to land. And so I feel like I have to have these conversations frequently and with just him differently, even differently than Griffin.
They because both of how they show up in the world.
Yes, because of how they show up in the world. And right now what I'm trying to do and I struggle with and like journal about this daily is not muting him and not making him feel like he has a personality or behaviors that have to be muted, but really about sadly what is the appropriate place and level in which those behaviors and those emotions can show up. And that just like a really crappy thing. And I forget what he said a couple weeks ago, but I just came up to my room and just burst into tears because I wasn't ready for it. And it was sort of like, you never say this to Griffin. You only say this to me. And it feels like daddy doesn't want to hear what I have to say. And I forget where we were. We were out somewhere. And he made a comment in front of some other families around us. I don't remember what he said. And Russ kind of like shushed him very quickly. Mm-hmm. And it was a human guttural reaction from a Black parent surrounded by non-Black families. And it's interesting now that Malcolm can catch on to our interactions with our friends and our interactions with our families, depending on like who's over at our house and kind of how Russ and I behave. And I hate to say the word behave, but like, that's what it feels like.
Oh, totally. It's social conditioning, right? How much can I bring Black culture into this situation?
Right. Yeah. And down to like what I wear and how I wear my hair and
totally.
And, you know, he said, you wouldn't say that if Uncle so-and-so was here. And I'm like, very, very fair, very fair. And he's starting to see that and he's starting to pick up on that. And my prayer for him is just that it won't mute him in the world. He has such a big, bold, active personality. And I think for the first couple of years, I was really trying to figure out how to contain it so that people didn't think he was the wild kid or the bad kid or the rough kid. And these labels that we put on kids. And actually you helped me with this. You posted something long, long, long time, probably years ago, that like just really stuck with me, is that, you know, how I speak about my child in front of someone else, or the words in which I use to describe personality or behavior really kind of stick. And a lot of them really suck. I mean, and then I was finding myself so embarrassed and really wanting to kind of like change these behaviors. And really what I want to do is just remove the label. Who came up with this stupid thing to call, like, he's very active. And I changed it from being like wild or unruly to he's just active. He needs to move his body. That's a way that he finds actually calmness. If we can move our, and so we, like changing that and reframing that in my brain was very helpful to help navigate him through his days, but they have not yet changed my internal worry and my internal effort to sort of shift how he's seen.
Totally. Well, and the code switching, you know, that he's going to inevitably have to do.
Yeah. I mean, and even sports, and it's like the way that parents in this school will kind of talk about him.
Totally.
Is immediately that, and he's sporty. So this is also me like diving into a weird place that only I think a Black family in an all white school would do is, but you know, they're not acknowledging him as being sporty and athletic just because they've seen his ability in sports. It's just all of a sudden he's like the Black kid at school who happens to be really fast and happens to be really strong. And so instead of calling him wild, they try to like oh, as soon as he starts to play football. And I was like, well, he doesn't actually want to play football. Right. And as soon as he starts to play basketball, and I'm like, he tried it, he doesn't like it.
This dude loves baseball. He lives for baseball.
Yeah, like, it's so, I hate trying to feel like I always have to kind of like bash that image that's being created. And I'm very active in Griffin school. He goes to a school that's 8 minutes down the road because he's still in preschool. And his school is super diverse and lovely and wonderful, and everyone's down to earth. So we have lots of friends through that school. And sadly, Griffin will come to our district school next year for kindergarten. And I've never been in a school where I want to keep my distance, and we're here now. And, you know, I think we're just processing that, like, not just processing, we've known this, school rating and social environment around school are two very different things, and very important that you find the one that you really connect with, because there's a lot of
feel safe with a school rating. Maybe it's a really good school for a white kid that's safe there, you know, like that doesn't mean, it doesn't mean it's the right school for everyone. And that sucks.
Yeah. And it does impact my parenting, and it does impact my reaction to Malcolm's behavior or mannerisms, or, and I hate trying to make him feel smaller, that he can't move his body, that he can't be fast, that he can't play with the kids, that he can't wrestle. And there's 10 of them wrestling. Why am I the only one that's standing there like helicopter screaming at Malcolm to like not be so rough? Because I need parents to see that I'm, you know, not paying attention to my child's behavior, and that he isn't being too much, or that I have control of the situation. All those things are very different and are definitely changing sort of where we're at in this stage of life, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it unfortunately makes total sense.
Yeah.
Man, it blows. And thank you for sharing your experience and a snapshot into that, because I think we cannot talk about respectful parenting without talking about racism within respectful parenting, and that not everyone has the same freedoms to allow their kid to express anywhere or to respond with respect just anywhere, in the same way that you were saying, like, Russ shut down the conversation out of safety and fear, and that we can't have this conversation without acknowledging that. And I appreciate you sharing your journey and experience with this. Jamie, I have had the privilege of watching you evolve in this space and grow as a parent for a few years now. You've been a seed follower for a while, for years. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that I've just had a front row seat and been able to be there with you on this journey. And it's been really rad to watch it evolve for you and see how, and now to hear your focus on you. And that was one of the steps of the puzzle that I think so many of us, we put it off until we realize, like, oh, we can't anymore, that it's crucial to us showing up. And it's rad to hear you say that you're focusing on that because you're worth it. And you regulating yourself and building that awareness is so key for the boys. And I'm jazzed to get to know you.
Oh, and I'm so grateful for you, because I think in all the respectful parenting and all the resources that people could find, I think you have normalized for me that it is okay to still show up and do this work, and it's not going to be a perfect journey, and I don't have to be wonderful at it all the time, but that I'm still worthy of continuing to put that effort in. And so I think, you know, the Seed Village and all the resources that are there are so beneficial for parents that are really just trying to do this all the time. And so I'm so grateful for you and this community that you've created, because I think there's a lot of spaces where I would have felt out of place or not worthy, and that I just wasn't good at it, or I was failing. And I feel really empowered. And so I'm very, very thankful for you.
That's rad. Thanks, Jamie. Thank you for hanging out with us today. And I will continue to see you in DMs. Where can folks find you if they're interested in connecting with you?
Yeah. So I am Jamie Jones Fit on Instagram. And you can contact me there. You can follow me with Birth Smarter for any of the parenting and baby prenatal classes that you could possibly need there. Kind of all over the place.
Rad. Thank you so much, Jamie. You're the bomb.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the transcript at voicesofyourvillage.com. Did you know that we have a special community over on Instagram hanging out every day with more free content? Come join us at seed.and.sow, S-E-W. Take a screenshot of you tuning in, share it on the gram, and tag seed.and.sow to let me know your key takeaway. If you're digging this podcast, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We love collaborating with you to raise emotionally intelligent humans.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model. So that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun. So check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.